Hello again, and welcome to the InfoVenture Podcast, a podcast for, by, and about founders and the hellish nightmare lives they lead. Well, again, and welcome. I have the wonderful pleasure this week of sitting down with Mr. Michael Winning, the founder and chief executive of Win, which in his own words is Tinder for Jobs. I had a lot of fun talking to him. I think you'll see he has a bubbly personality, and I think there is this bulldog tenacity that you just pick up on certain folks, and he certainly has it. So as a typical person might go to a buddy and say, hey, let's start a bar. The Michael Winning version of that is, yeah, I'm going to go to Abu Dhabi and raise $3 million and open the biggest bar that Boston has ever seen. So that's who we're dealing with here. So please give a warm welcome for Mr. Michael Winning of Win. Well, welcome the great and powerful Michael Winning. Hello, welcome. Thank you for hopping in tonight, bud. I'm really excited to dig into the story because, like we were talking about, you've got a very interesting pivot that I think is probably a hell of a lot more compelling than mine. I'm very excited to hear.
Well, thanks, man. You're definitely the first person to call me great and powerful, so that has got my tires pumped up here before we dive in.
Sounds good. Well, cheers, buddy. And I'm not drinking to be a better host. It's just I've got dinner with my mom later, so I'm just liquored up.
Yeah. I'm going.
Yeah, man. Well, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks.
So I've been thinking about the right place to start with you, but I know, and I can tell from your background here, you're quite the sports guy, and I'm wondering maybe if you could start there. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the world of sports and what you were doing, and I'm sure what kind of
yeah. So I'm a hockey player, and you know my dad is from his whole side of the family is from Southborough, Massachusetts. So when I was growing up, we always had like a hockey stick in our hand, and we moved. So I grew up like real upstate New York, Rochester, and we moved down to Plano, Texas when I was five, and people looked at us like we were crazy, like they had never seen a hockey stick before, right? Like, and they were like busting out rollerblades and stuff. And so I was like, all right, well, let me show you guys what hockey's all about. Started playing the Stars, moved here to Dallas. So I went to the first ever Dallas Stars game, and that definitely got me hooked. And wanted to be a goaltender, like really just liked, I don't know what I was enamored with. Maybe it was that, like, if the puck went in the net, it was my fault. Like, I like kind of being that last line of defense where it's like, all right, I got you guys, you know what? And, you know, was fortunate enough to be pretty good at it. So, you know, I made the all-city team here in Dallas when I was, like, 14, back when there was only one team. And
oh my god, while you still had the hips for it.
Yeah, although yeah. Now I don't even want to see what an MRI of my hips look like. Sure, it's not pretty. But yeah, you know, that took me up to Chicago. We played in the Central States League, and then from Chicago I got seen by a prep school in Connecticut, which took me up there and was lucky enough to play D1 prep hockey and then college in Boston. And you know, my old hockey coach used to always joke that we all end up in men's leagues sooner or later. So still always bring in, you know, with goaltending, there's only one of you on the ice at any given time. And so you always had to put in the work, whether it was dry land, conditioning, weight room, whatever. Otherwise you weren't going to play. And I feel like that's actually kind of really helped me a lot in business, because I just, like, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, right? And you just got to always kind of go after it. And, you know, it's certainly a grind. And that's how, and so I got my master's in sport business management as well. This will actually be a perfect segue in here because I got into recruiting and never would have thought that I would end up having the company I have, because I was put into like the most miserable job ever by a recruiter. And, you know, it was an all-time great sell job because they made this thing sound like, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. And dude, it was like the moldiest, grossest bread. Like you couldn't even call it bread. I was miserable within like a month. And I was so miserable, it actually made me go back to school, which honestly, I didn't think was possible. But I, you know, found a program in New York at Manhattanville College, got my master's in sport business management, thinking, okay, someday, you know, I'm going to be the GM of the Dallas Stars. That's really what I want to do. And as I was coming out, you know, it's a 2-year program. In the last, you know, 6 months, I'm interviewing with the Bruins, with the Cubs on the baseball side of things. And I had a buddy of mine that I'd played hockey with previously who has said, "Hey, dude, come up. You know, it's not really sports, but you should come up. I'm working at, you know, one of the best places to work in Boston," all this stuff. And I'm like, "Man, what do they do?" And he's like, "Oh, we're a recruiting firm." I probably can't say exactly what I told them on here, but I was like, "Yeah, absolutely not. There's no way." And to his credit, shouts out Andrew Ciampa, if you're listening to this. You know, he said, "Hey, dude, come up to Boston for the weekend. If nothing else, have a beer. Let's, you know, shoot the S and catch up." And
so after you told Andrew absolutely fucking not, then you're into that partner.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Because this dude, he actually worked with me at that miserable job before. And he was like, like small world. And so he was like, "Dude, trust me. It's nothing like that company. Like, this place is awesome." And I'm like, "All right, why not?" Because, like, dude, working in sports is obviously a dream for a lot of people. But unless you're at the GM level or really higher up in the organization, you're making like 20 grand a year, right? Like 20, 30 grand a year, especially in hockey, you start out as a talent scout. So you're on the road like the first 9 months, you're on the road like 250 days, making 30 grand, living in like the rink in Tulsa, trying to find like the next big hit. So I was like, you know what, let's just see what's up here, have something in the back pocket. And I think the real reason I got hooked on it, you know, it was a cool company to work for, but my parents made me start volunteering when I was 8 years old. Like, they're always very, very big on giving back and helping out those less fortunate than you. And always loved it, like, very rewarding. And I guess with recruiting, I was like, well, you know what? Like, I could help people for a living. That'd be kind of sick, you know, whether it's, you know, help them, you know, get a promotion they want or a pay raise. And I got my business management degree. And instead of working in one industry, I can work in all these ones. And so that kind of like jump started and how I got into recruiting, believe it or not. And I feel like I've been like talking for like 10 minutes right now. So yeah, that's I'll shut up there. But
a born recruiter. Exactly. So what I'm always curious what it feels like when you're doing that recruiting, and how you go about, you know, once you're actually in kind of a conversation. I mean, like, yeah. did you have the flexibility to really be kind of discretionary and help them choose different places? Or is the reality of it, you know, you're more limited on the supply side of the job, so you're kind of just trying to find the right person?
Yeah.
Like, what was that balance?
Dude, that was that's a good question. That was one of the hard things when I first got into recruiting, was that I've experienced, like, having experienced firsthand how miserable a recruiter can make someone, like, I was very discerning and making sure that, okay, is this the right opportunity for you, right? Like, I don't want to put you someplace where you're going to be miserable. I don't need that hanging on my head at night. You know, karma's a bitch. Don't want to deal with that. And when you're with like a big agency, like, yeah, they were a great place to work, but at the end of the day, they don't really care about your morals, right? And like, unfortunately, man, there's a lot of like shitty people to work for, bad companies, like, just, and I didn't want to do that. And so, you know, they're like, yeah, okay, you get back to work. And so that's when actually I went out and started my own staffing company, recruiting company, back in 2017. And, you know, they always say you're supposed to have a niche, right? Like, you're supposed to work with tech companies or finance companies. And, you know, for me, what my niche was I just wanted to work with companies that really treated their employees well. I didn't care what industry you were in, you know, because, like, I'm not a salesperson, and Aristotle said that you can't teach a man anything. You can only help him find the answer in themselves. And that's really the way I go about recruiting, is I'm not trying to convince you to take this job. Most times I'm actually trying to talk you out of taking it, because then when those people actually convince you, like, yo, this is the opportunity for me, okay, I know they're really serious about it. But when I started my company in 2017, that made things a lot easier, because, like, dude, I had one guy who was referral-based business. You know, one guy was referred to me within the first 3 minutes. He owned an insurance group here in Dallas. He was like bragging about how he'll chew employees out in front of everyone if they're like messing around, like he thought he was the man for it. And I'm like, all right, Chuck, well, there's no real need for us to talk further, man. You know, thanks for your time. So that's how I do it, really, is just trying to find out and take a genuine interest in okay, what is it you're looking to do? If I have it, great. If not, I'm not really selling you anything.
So that's a great segue. I think there are a lot of folks like yourself that have, you know, wonderful personalities and can kind of connect the right dots. So maybe tell me a little bit about that transition, kind of going beyond that into kind of the click into when, you know, how did that come about? And, you know, what was kind of that? I don't know. See, there's kind of like a magic around what was the magic moment that I think is mostly BS, but it's always curious to me how people think about it.
You're absolutely right, man. So, the way when started was that I didn't want to work for the big agency. When I went about starting my own company here, it actually came about out of necessity because I was in Boston. I had these two people who recruited me to help them get their staffing startup off the ground here in Dallas. And I thought, great, it's a chance for me to move back home. And they wanted to hire me to have a differentiator because they're like, you know, Michael, most companies, staffing companies say we have this great way of doing this, we have that great way of doing this. It's all BS. Find us a true differentiator that we can use because they've got all these relationships, et cetera. So I said, okay, that's interesting. I like solving problems. Like I'm the weirdo who brings the crossword puzzle book on the flight with me. And so I ended up partnering with someone who was a director for Cisco Systems. And over the course of 9 months, we had built this platform that could quantify using defined and variable metrics, not just how good of a fit a person was for the job, but how good of a fit the person was for the company and how good of a fit that company was for them. And so spent like 9 months working on this with him. And I took it to the CEO and CFO. I said, all right, I got this. Here is how we are different. And I presented to them. They're like, yeah, that's cool. But listen, we were talking and we both decided that we're just going to sell this company in 5 years. So we want to keep business as usual. And then you could be the CEO someday. And in my head, I'm like, what a fucking waste of time, man. Like, really? Like, I just spent all this time for this. And so I said, all right, well, that's not what I'm interested in. I think this is a great idea. I'm going to go find a company and find some investors that do. And so, you know, found an investor who was like, all right, dude, like, give you 150K. I'm like, man, fuck yeah, let's do it. Call my business partner. And he was, for lack of better words, a wantrepreneur. Like, he really wanted to start a company, but he didn't want to give up his $400,000 a year salary at Cisco Systems. And I can't really blame him for that. Sounds pretty sweet. But I said, okay, no worries, man. I'm going to raise the capital we need to be able to pay your salary, get you on board here. And so I was able to secure two meetings down in Austin with a couple of VC firms. And literally like 4 days before that first meeting, he came to me and said, hey, Michael, you know, remember that non-compete that I said wasn't going to be an issue? Well, it looks like it's going to be an issue. And he built this on his home servers, right? Like for all this time, the 9 months, he's like, trust me, dude, we're good. I'm like, all right, great. Well, I can't go to court with Cisco Systems. So I said, all right, you know, buddy, thanks. I went back to my investor and I said, look, here's what happened. The software, you know, we can't do it. And shouts out to Lynn Dixon. He said, Michael, you know what? I invested in you. I didn't invest in the software. So start a traditional recruiting company and we'll figure out that unique multiplier on resale. And so I'm like, all right, thanks for the opportunity. You know, I went out and became certified in HR management. Just because there's a lot of great small businesses out there that are great places to work, but you know, they get kind of lost in the job boards and stuff, right? Like most people don't know about them. So I thought, okay, if I know HR management, I could probably give more value to these companies. And, you know, we had board meetings the first 6 months and every board meeting, they threw out some ideas. These guys were finance guys, right? So most of these ideas were really bad, like really bad. And you're sitting there like, oh, yeah, good one. All right, like, let me jot this down. I'll do some work on it. But then one day, the guy Lynn said, you know, Michael, he's like, my son's 22 years old. Him and his buddies are always on Fortnite. You know, they're not the kind of kids who are going to go on Indeed or Monster and look through hundreds of job descriptions to find a job they like. So is there a way we can either simplify or gamify job searching to kind of gear it towards like that next generation? And that was I call it my old shit moment where I'm like, dude, yeah, like I've literally been listening and I don't know when was the last time job searching sucks, dude. And I've been hearing it and listening to it on the streets for like 6 years at this point. That's my dog, my coworker. And so that was the moment where I started and I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm gonna do this thing, and I'm gonna mute my mic real quick because I feel like I'm probably messing up y'all's podcast there.
Cool. I think that's a beautiful entry into the market. I love a lot of pieces of that, especially the investor saying, "Look, I invest in you." I think that says a lot. But also, you know, being able to pivot like that takes a lot of heart. I mean, especially before you're you know, you even really gotten started, it would have been really easy to just say, you know, kind of pawn it off as this guy kind of did the shady thing. But being able to make it happen no matter what, I think it's what it's all about, sitting in your chair. So I respect that a lot.
Thanks, man. You know, I got to say, like, I grew up as a hockey player from Texas, man. So when I went up to the North and I played in Canada, all the shit I used to hear about, what are you doing out here? You don't belong out here. And, you know, I, you know, kind of like going back to, all right, I'm going to show y'all I know what's up, and, you know, be determined that if you want to make something happen, happen. And, you know, there was, I don't know how much time we have, just a quick segue, because this was like the third time this has happened to me. Back in 2010, when the Mavs were in the playoff, 2011 Mavs Heat in the finals, Cuban sold tickets to like American Airlines Center for like 10 bucks a piece, right? Even when they were in Miami, he's like, all right, come watch the Mavericks. And me and my buddy, we were ripping a bong at the time. And we were like, hey, you know what's crazy? If you look at sports bars, they're really just bars with sports on TV. Like, why hasn't anyone tried to recreate a sports bar and make it more like you're in the atmosphere of being at the game itself, right? Like in that camaraderie moment. So that was my entrepreneur earworm, because 3 weeks later, I quit my job and I was like, I bought a write your own business plan book, went home for living with my parents for 7 months, and put together this concept that was basically like, our first location was going to be in Boston. Recruited the sous chef from the Ritz-Carlton to come aboard, make our menu. Ended up, dude, I raised $2.6 million from an investment group out of Abu Dhabi. And I always joke.
Oh, my God. How old were you?
I was, 2011. So I was just about 25 years old. And nice. I used to joke that I'm like, man, you know, and Arabs don't drink. So I was like, man, you know it's a good business idea if these dudes are investing in the bar, right? And so I went over there. It was supposed to be a two-week trip. And it ended up being a four-week trip, because if you've ever worked with Arab businessmen, they want it to be the best, right? It's going to be the best business, you know, all this. And I was like, man, this is fucking awesome. I'm like, yeah, great. We'll do these seats. We'll do all this. And I flew back to the States. I landed in Boston. Now, obviously, to recreate, like, you're at a stadium, we need a big. We need, like, 30,000 square feet. Well, at least 10,000 square feet, 30-foot ceilings, or two floors.
Oh.
Yeah, and in downtown Boston, there is one place that I had that was able to do this downtown where we could get the most amount of foot traffic, and it was up for sale. And so I called my real estate agent in Atlanta. I said, good news, got the funding. Let's make this happen. And she said, bad news, when you were out of the country, a company came in and snatched up the lease. And if it falls through, it's yours, but it's Walgreens, so there, it's not going to. So that's actually, that Walgreens is still there in downtown Crossing. I'd immediately like call my investors and be like, well, this happened. And they're like, all right, just send the money back. We'll put a pin in it. And, you know, so anyway, like that was my first, where it's like, you're this close to the finish line. And then you're like, oh, shit. But you just got to persevere, man. You know, what else am I going to do with my life?
Wow, that's insane. So they what did you, there's only one place in the whole city where you could go?
Yeah, I mean, for us, ideally, because the way we wanted this thing to be structured was kind of like amphitheater style seating, kind of like if you ever been to a studio movie grill or an Alamo Draft House where you push the button, the waitresses bring food out. But because Boston's such a huge port city and it's right in the financial district, we could really maximize profits by having it open at lunch and having it be like, it's perfect for presentations, for companies having meetings. And then of course, because it's a big port city, huge football crowds, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, Champions League, Saturday morning soccer. In downtown Boston, only had three. So that was the location. And we could have gone out to like Chelmsford, Mass. But if you know Mass,
no one's going
to go. Exactly. You don't want to go to Chelmsford. No offense to anyone from Chelmsford, but yeah. So that was it. And I got a job in real estate, hoping it would help me find the commercial property. Didn't happen. And that's when I got recruited to that terrible company that made me so miserable I wanted to go back to school. So now we're full circle here.
You're a prime target. Oh my God. That's wild. So how did you end up talking to the guys in Abu Dhabi? Like how did you connect those dots?
So this was like my first foray into like, okay, do you have a good idea? And what I kind of realized is that when you have a good idea, more and more, like when you tell people about it, they're like, I know someone that might be interested in this, right? Might not be investing, it might not be whatever. But I had one buddy of mine who was like, dude, I'll buy you guys the doormats. Like, I got $60 I can invest, but that place sounds sick. And so I was happened to be dating a girl from the Emirates at the time. And she put me in touch. She's like, I think I know some people.
I think I need to go back again. How did you meet the girl from the Emirates?
So we met in college in Boston. You know, it's a huge college city. She was from Abu Dhabi, and then you know the rest is history.
Okay, all right. So then you're telling her about let's open the not only I want to open a bar, I want to open the biggest baddest ass bar basically ever, and. Then you're on the plane to Abu Dhabi?
Yeah, I mean, it's and that's like, I feel like a lot of what, I don't want to say there's a misconception, but I think when people, like when I first started a company and when like a lot of times, even when you see it in movies, it's there's this glamorization of it where it's like, okay, we put in this work. It's very like, you know, like sequential, right? It's very
linear. It's like a highlight reel.
Yeah, and it's right. Like, all right, well, like most times I leave out, I moved back in with my parents. My parents didn't like, I was smoking a ton of weed or anything. They're like, what are you doing with your life, Michael? Like you left this great job and you've got like this book with like 80 post-it notes in it. And like, you're going to write a business plan. Okay, cool. And then, you know, I just, yeah. So 7 months after that idea, I got to go out to Abu Dhabi, which was cool. Honestly, some of the friendliest, most hospitable people you ever meet. And one time I was,
so I hear
it rained for like the first time in 20 years when I was there, dude, you should have seen everyone running out in the streets, dancing and celebrating. It was like,
Michael's here. Michael's here.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, hey, listen, thanks guys. No, but it was cool, man. It was a great experience.
That's very interesting. It's very interesting. Okay, so I had to take you back. It was fascinating. So tell me a little bit more about the Cisco stuff, because that's fascinating. How did you? I'm just because I think this will say a lot about kind of what you're up to now. Is when you're defining those metrics. I'm always fascinated by, you know, measuring folks in a way that's not like. Astrology. So, you know, how did you go about doing that? You know, you picked up a lot of that stuff, you know, probably just being a recruiter, but when you try to apply systematic data to it, you know, there's a lot of variation between people and it's unpredictable. For especially a layperson like me. So how do you go about pairing them and how do you, map those attributes or even define them? And then how do you measure them? And how do you know they're going to work well together? I mean, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that's a pretty complex question, but I will do my best here. So, there are defined. Does candidate have X? Yes. Right. Like those were the easy ones. What we really tried to focus on was making sure that it's not like the problem. I think most companies view a culture, right? Like everyone wants to build this great culture, but a culture isn't a bunch of people who look alike or who think alike, you know, that's a cult, right? Like a culture is like a bunch of people of different backgrounds, different mindsets that are like, you know what? We want to achieve this, right? Like, this is why I like working for this company. This is what I want to do. And so we try not to focus on so much like, do you want someone who's hardworking? Okay, yes, like obviously, right? Like one of the things that I ask companies when I meet with them now, especially when it's in the developer side of things, like in they're building software or engineering is, okay, are you the type of manager that likes to expect or inspect? There's no right answer, but do you prefer to say, hey, this is what I need you to build, come back to me and let me know when it's ready? Or are you the type that you want to, not that you're micromanaging, but that you like frequent check-ins to say, hey, what's going on? Did you see any bugs? Anything I can help you with? They're just different managerial styles. But if you're the type of manager who likes to expect things being done, And I bring you a developer that might be the best in the world, but they need that constant communication and interaction. It's not going to be a fit. And that person ultimately isn't going to be very, very happy. So a lot of it came down to, I don't want to like do this bastardization of like, oh, it was a personality test. But really it was just trying to find out those intrinsic motivators and like those emotional factors that allowed us to say, okay, on this level from a hiring manager, which is a bit more defined, to at this point, what does the company do? And then it kind of expands out from there. What is this person looking to do? And that was really it. I really wish I could have seen that thing come to market, because it was like, he really had started building this because he was like an advanced director of professional services for Cisco Systems. And it's funny like how these things come about, because when I started working for this company and those two ladies were like, find us a differentiator. I'm like, okay, where do you start? And you just start researching. And I had this one lady who put us in touch because she's like, hey, you know, you've got experience raising money. I've got a friend who's working on this software and, you know, could you just talk to him about it? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like thinking I'm just helping someone out. This is what I like to do. And I get on the phone and he's like, Michael, you know, I can't tell you how many times over the last 4 years I've had someone come into my office. I had a phone screen with them. They sounded great. They sit down in that chair. And within 5 minutes, I could tell you that person would never be a fit to work here in a million years. And he's like, so I built something that could prevent that from happening. And I was like, go on.
So that's interesting. He's coming in from like, you know, I'm tired of wasting time in interviews. Yeah, that's great.
Dude. And so like, but he kind of built this as a pet project for him that he like wanted to use. And so coming at it from, okay, we're not just using this internally, but on the agency side of things where you're working with all of these different clients, we spent the next number of months just basically working to kind of say, okay, could I take these three different parameters and these three qualifications, and let's see if we can make this thing really kind of relevant, actionable, and insightful in the recommendations that it made. And well, Mikhail, I don't know what you're doing, man. Hope you're doing well, dude. No shit. That was it. And then it's kind of funny actually how it goes full circle, because what I do now and like what happened with when is like, can we simplify our gamified job searching, which is like going back to all the crap that goes into making something. Is like, when I got asked that question, I went into like a rabbit hole. Like I was living in this really tiny house. I had one room. I just had whiteboards. And I was like, all right. The original idea that I got from it was a meme of Will Ferrell sitting on the toilet. And it said, looking for jobs while I'm at work. And I'm like, man, that's true. Like, how come no one's ever optimized this thing for like a mobile device? Because the best talent out there doesn't have time to search job boards. So I'm like, man, if I'm riding the T to work in the morning in Boston, well, obviously, first hurdle is, all right, job descriptions suck. Like, no one wants to read a job description on here. And so I just, again, you know, started a whiteboard. And basically, like, what I came up with was something like Tinder for jobs. And I kind of arrived at this because I started looking at competitors, Monster, LinkedIn, Indeed, Career Builder. And, like, really quickly, I realized, like, man, these were built for companies to find people. Like, no one's yet built an application that lets you find the right company for you. Whether it's, I mean, shit, I would have loved to have found a company that would have paid off my student loans. I'm almost there, but man, that would have been a tremendous help. I'd already be done if I had a company like that. You know, if you're a single parent who needs on-site daycare, right? Like, right now, you've got to look through 2,000 job descriptions and hope that a company even advertises it. So what I wanted to do was say, all right, you want this, that, and these in a company. Here's our algorithm. Here's what it does. Here's the companies that match what it is you're looking for and that offer this. And so, you know, really just kind of trying to flip the script of rather than helping we're helping companies find people, but we're doing it by helping people find the right company. You know, a company's just an amalgamation of people. Right now, everyone else, our competitors are working on getting robots to interview people. And it's like, yo, dude, that robot doesn't have to work with that person like you do. Like, you know, you should maybe, I feel like we're kind of missing the forest through the trees here.
The question there, right, around how do you define all these metrics, et cetera, and kind of create like a top-down assessment. What it sounds like you've done is kind of you know, push that off into becoming like a real, you know, wealth of knowledge from the network interaction type of deal, which is fascinating. But I also, the macro environment that you're dealing with, you know, I mean, you got the wind at your back for the foreseeable future. You know, I think people, I certainly wouldn't have been able to work with these folks here at Nth if we didn't have the benefit of, you know, the reset of expectations when people lived through the pandemic and realized they didn't have to, you know, pay homage down at the office. But I think there's been a real kind of shift of power to people and taking back kind of ownership of the things that they spend their life doing.
Yeah, it's actually like, so when I first got this question, I read an article about the 5 trends for the future recruiting. Thank God it was a good article because they've all kind of come true, right? If it had been a bad article, we wouldn't be here talking right now. And, you know, in my early design prototype, like one of the benefits that the developer selected was work from home, which like at the time before COVID hit, everyone's like, man, yeah, that would be really sick to work from home, but that'll never happen. And now like fast forward, you know, 2 years later, and, you know, that's a big part of what's, you know, really kind of motivated me here is like, you know, different things matter to different people, right? And luckily that, you know, things have, well, not luckily, it's probably not the right word to use, but, you know, the pandemic really kind of made everyone sort of reassess things, man. And it's like, you know, life's too short. Like, I've been saying this for years, life's too short to work for a dickhead, dude. Like, you don't put up with that, man. Like, don't be miserable, you know? Like, go find, I say to candidates, if your company doesn't appreciate what you do, I guarantee I can find 4 that do. Guarantee you I can. You know, go see what else is out there. And, you know, I guess, you know, I'm hopeful that we can, you know, sort of bring this out. And, you know, we're a big part of the hurdles that I had when I initially started was that, like, the way we're approaching this is so far off the beaten path as to what companies are currently doing now that there was like, oh, wow, you know, that's right. Like, I mean, dude, people used to go on dates based on like classified ads in a newspaper, right? Like, can you think about how many people got catfished before they realized, yeah, you know what? Words on a piece of paper doesn't really do a good job explaining, you know, this person. Well, we're talking about a company, a job, a culture, and you're hoping your 250-word fifth grade essay where all the KSAs were copied and pasted from some blog you found, right? Like, you really think that's going to get people amped up to join your company? Like, there's got to be a better way to do this, you know?
When you're doing this tender for jobs, tell me a little bit about kind of some of the first people that got involved and, you know, how you guys went about actually building it. I'm always fascinated how people actually build the apps. I have a little bit of experience with that, but it's certainly not my specialty. I tend to steer pretty clear from tech because I know how much smarter most tech guys are than me. So tell me a little bit about how you went about actually creating the architecture and the framework and bringing on the engineers, et cetera. How did that work?
I mean, like, I'll always be the first dude to tell you, I don't know what I don't know, you know, and I'm really kind of honest with that, you know, like, life is all just about continuously learning, and, you know, nothing's a failure if you learn from it, just like what happened in Abu Dhabi, just like what happened previously, you know, I'm just trying to learn, and so, you know, I really quickly, so I did my wireframe, right, like, on my whiteboard, and I went back in the next board meeting, I'm like, all right, just picture this, right? So I'm like, board, you know, whiteboard, you could do it like this. And that board member who gave me the idea, he said, Michael, this makes my dick hard. And I was like, whoa, all right. Like, that's pretty, I'm glad you like it. You know, and he's like,
I'm gonna pop in a second.
Yeah, no, please go ahead, dude. And so he's like, all right, I know, like, I got to get this in front of my buddy Marty. He owns a valuation firm here. They look at 250 of these a year. He'll be able to tell us if this is good or if it's not good, right? I'm like, all right, cool, let's go. A couple weeks later, went over to him. This guy's like a Mensa member, comes in. He's real serious at first. He's my boy now. What's up, Marty? And he's just like, he sits down, he's got his 2 senior managers there with him, and I go through and I'm like, all
right. He brings a crew.
Yeah, the crew, right? And I was like, okay, that's kind of intimidating because I'm here with like a crappy PowerPoint. Like, and dude, like, this was like, a 40 to 50 page PowerPoint at this point, right? Because really,
real prime.
This was like, all right, like, again, you don't know what you don't know. Now my slide's like 10 slides, right? But back in the day, I'm like,
yeah, max.
Okay,
yeah.
Here's what the job seekers focused on. Here's what comes. But anyway, I went through all of it. Maybe not all of it. He had questions. But, you know, I answered him. He goes, Michael, like, this is probably one of the best presentations I've seen this year. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, all right, that's kind of you. Really kind now, knowing what I know now. But he's like, no, you're spot on. Like, what I try to solve for on this platform is that, you know, all these companies want to compete with Apple and Google for talent. But my answer was always, well, you can't because they have brand awareness and you don't. So I really wanted to kind of build this platform that let them be like, yo, here's who we are. Here's what we do. Here's what we're all about. And you should want to work here if this. And so I got kind of those good, you know, those good vibes from them and thought, all right, like, we're on to something here. And I immediately went out and just started dev agencies, right? Like, just, I tell my employees, the only bad questions are the ones you ask me before you ask Google, right? Like, you got the whole world, you know, the whole world of knowledge at your fingertips. Just give it a type, see what happens. I still try and convince my mom that sometimes, but she's like, how do I download YouTube? And I'm like, oh my God, all right. So, you know, I went out, talked to some dev agencies, talked to some here in America, some in South America, ended up settling on one in Poland. And I'm a big, like, this is probably advice. I don't know if you guys can edit this out if it's bad advice, but I'm a big believer in vibes. Like, for me, it's like, if I'm looking at a company, two companies side by side, and maybe one's like slightly better than another, but that guy's like a pretentious asshole, and this guy's like, I feel like I've known him for 10 years. I'm going with the dude I feel like I've known for 10 years because I'm confident that if we work well together, we can make up that slight little bit of difference. Right?
It's the sixth sense.
Yes, yeah, exactly, absolutely. Man. And so I talked to this guy who's now, he's now the CEO of a company called Helipaddy out of London, my buddy Phil, and like brother from another mother when we first talked. And I said, man, all right. Plus, at that time, Eastern European prices or like Central European prices compared to here in America, I was like, dude, right. This is like nuts. Great quality, fraction of the cost. Let's do it. So I went over there. We did the prototype, did the branding, all of that, came back, started talking to more investors. So that was how I found my dev team, was really just talking to people and saying, all right, like, send me your portfolio. Let me see what you guys can do. And let's fucking vibe. Let's make this happen.
You've got kind of an MVP, if you will. And, you know, you're going to that kind of second round of investor and saying, hey, we got something to, you know, really put forward here. What did it look like when you were ready to, you know, how did that go? And then, you know, you start working with some of your first clients, you know, what was that like?
Yeah. So really like, because at that first point, I was kind of just bootstrapping. Like, that's where all my market research was doing, was helping people hire and being like, hey, you know, what do you not like about job searching? Whatever. And so I was able to get together, you know, enough funds to get design prototype. And I had this terrible experience with this angel investor, more like a devil investor. Am I right? Nah, I'm just kidding. But we can go on to that some other time if you want. But yeah, so I came back with this design prototype and I started going to these investors. And it was one of the most frustrating things ever because I would go through this and they would all be like, man, this, you're so right. Like, why isn't it done this way? And I'm like, I know, right, dude? Like, it makes a lot of sense. But one thing. And my breaking point was I had one investor who was like, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, and all these guys, Monster, Indeed, all these guys are in a knife fight and you're about to show up and pull out a gun. But I really, you know, for me personally, prefer decks to be written in the active voice, not the passive voice. And I was like, are you fucking, I didn't say this, but I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh my God. And so I posted a job for a chief strategy officer, like just threw it up on LinkedIn and said, yo, here's the deal. Like, I put a lot of personality into my job postings and, you know, it works because people aren't like, oh, look, another boring thing to read. Like, here's something. I was like, dude,
I have never seen that not work. I mean, every time we're having trouble hiring for somebody, I'm like, all right, let me see the JD. Like, you know, let me throw some sriracha in here because obviously, you know.
I've thought about adding it like as a service to my companies because I get like 5 times more applicants, but I think mine started with like searching for jobs is as much fun as running naked backwards through a cornfield, right? Like something stupid like that. And you know, it was one of my highlights. So people are like, dude, that's the best job description ever read, whatever. And so I got synced up with this guy, Rav, who's actually a board member of mine now, because, you know, him at the time, shouts out Rav Carwell, you know, he was like, hey, look, let me help you out, man, because what you have here is superior. Like, this is way better than anyone I've seen. But because your idea is so far off the beaten path, you don't need investors. You need logos right now. Like, you need people to validate this for these investors. So I thought, oh, okay, that makes sense. All right, like, let me go do it, you know. And so I talked to a couple small businesses, and that's really who I built this for. And they were excited about it. And then like kind of the second oh shit moment was when I got synced up with one of the heads of the strategic planning office for 7-Eleven. And I said, yeah, look, here's, you know, kind of what we're building. And he was like, man, he's like, this is great. Like this adds a lot of value, not only to our HQ, but our retail locations as well, because, well, that's probably another story. But yeah. And so I always like, how soon will this thing be ready? And I was like, we're trying for the end of this year. Like I need money. If you want to give me some money, that'll help me build it. You know,
it's up to you, man. Hey, you work
for your court there, sir. And so, you know, I was like, oh my God. So I went back and literally that investor who told me I prefer things in the active voice, not the passive voice. I couldn't even finish telling him about 7-Eleven. He's like, if you still want money, I'll give you money. And I'm like, oh, cool. Well, how much? And he's like, what are your terms? And I'm like, start trying to just be like, how much, you know, 100K, 200K. And he's like, starts asking for it. I'm like, look, Woody, I totally wasn't prepared for this, man. Let me just think about this and get back to you, you know, later. And so he ended up putting some money in, you know, put in about 200K. And I was like, man, fantastic. Like, let's get to work. Let's start building this. And so really it was that kind of, if you're doing something that's really very, not like an iteration of like X plus one, X plus two.
Stepwise.
Exactly. You need, because I think investors like to consider themselves very intelligent, and they are. Like, they're like savants, right? Like, as I've kind of grown older, I've realized, all right, these people are really good. Like, when I first went to a networking group with all these business owners, I was like, my God, the titans of industry. All of these people know what it takes to run an effective business. And then, like, the more I met with them, I was like, man, you were just really good at one thing, and you just hired people, right? Like, okay, cool. Well, that's what investors are, right? Is they were really good at what they did, and they made a profit on that. And that's where I hope to be someday. But they tend to like to stay in their lane, right? Like, if you're an oil and gas guy, you want to do oil and gas. And if you, you know, if you're a tech guy, you want to invest in tech. And I don't understand that. Diversify your portfolios is my opinion, but they obviously made more than I do. So I don't listen to what I'm saying. But they want things to be validated. And especially what was tough for me is like, imagine when was the last time that investor looked for a job? Like, none of them had a clue. Like, they, most of them, like, surely it can't be that bad. And I'm like, all right, bro, hold on to your seat. Like, let me pull up this website for you. And yeah. And so, you know, really, it's, I needed to find some validation, market validation, as they might call it.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think I could get a first round interview at Nth Venture if I applied today. They would laugh me out of the room. There's no way. Yeah, that's fascinating. So you get a few folks that they work with, you know, the logo development, and you go back to the investors. You know, you get kind of powered up with your 200K. What happens then?
200K goes quick, as I came to realize, because what I did at that time, so I've been bootstrapping with my recruiting company. And if I was smarter, if I had a time machine, I would have gone back and said, you know what, I'm hiring 2 more salespeople and 2 more recruiters, and we'll just use the revenues from this to create a lucrative cash flow. But my MVP, they were ballparking 180K, right? And so, so I'm like, all right, that's like closing.
So it's five.
That's like closing one or two deals, right? And okay, so Will, yeah, exactly, dude. Like really quickly ended up spending $200K in the software for like a bunch of designs and maybe like 10% of it coded. And I was like, welp, life comes at you fast, dude, right? So then you're like, all right, well, now you start, ended up talking to more investors, talking to more companies, and I actually hit kind of a roadblock there. Because what had actually happened was while we were building it, I got introduced to one of the managing partners for IBM, who was like, hey, you should talk to Michael. He's building this software, and she loved it. She's like, dude. Well, she didn't say dude, but yeah, you probably caught on to that by now. She's like, hey, you know, IBM, like, man, like all these companies outsource their HR to us. Like, this would be a great platform that we could use to manage the recruitment efforts for all of these companies. But, you know,
that's a very, very big conversation.
Yes. And hang on, I want to make sure I don't say anything that gets her in trouble. So she was like, okay, the joke is that they don't innovate really at IBM. They buy companies that do and they throw them in their portfolio and ipso facto.
Welcome to Big Blue.
Innovating, right? Welcome to the big leagues. And so they're laggards in a sense with some things. They want to see validation. So what the plan was is to use one of her big clients as a use case, take that info, go back to the C-suite there and say, hey, here's what we should be doing.
The C-suite of IBM?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so exactly. I'm like, holy shit, Michael, things are really looking up for you, man. The problem is her client's in healthcare and the process is so slow for them to review and approve things, right? We're still going through it. And so I'm like, all right, where do I find investors? Like, that's like one thing where, you know, it's probably I shouldn't have moved back to Dallas because all of my friends, my whole network's up in Boston, right? So I'm down here and I'm like, man, where do I, like, I'm like, Woody, do you know anyone? And then you go to like these angel groups and you apply and they're like, get the fuck out of here, dude. And I'm like, what? I'm like, this is a good idea. You know, like, hey, come on. And you know what? Like they're, I don't know.
I read a great article about those angel like networking groups that it's just a lot of the guys who couldn't get into the country club and now they just like to shit on kids with good ideas.
I'm so glad you said that. That's like what all of the
the investment rate is so low. Yes. It's like 10% of them will make an investment. It's horrible.
The one group I got in front of, I went in there and I pitched and like the first presenter, it was like, okay, when you get NOS in your Honda, well, a lot of times when you go to resell it, you don't know what that's worth. So we take a picture, and then that picture will tell you what this aftermarket part is worth. And I'm like, man, I'm going to crush this, right? I'm like, all right, everyone, here's a problem that a lot of people have, not like, you know, Fast and Furious 9. So here's this problem. Here's our solution. Here's why we're better. And they ask you to leave the room as entrepreneurs, and we're out there, we're talking, and one of this guy who like runs Techstars down here in Dallas, he like kind of co-hosts that event. So he came out and started talking to the other entrepreneur and he was like, which one of you guys is when? And I was like, oh, that's me. And he's like, and I'm like, oh, like word travels fast. I guess I didn't see him in there. And he's like, no, you're the one they're all talking about right now. Which I'm like, oh, sweet. Okay. Because they all talk and say, which companies are we going to invest in? 3 weeks later, they call me out and they're like, yeah, no one's interested. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what? Are you serious? And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, any feedback I could have, that would be great. And he's like, no. And he's like, I don't get it either because you killed it in your presentation, but no one responded to the newsletter. And I'm like,
oh, my God. My future is determined by a newsletter.
By a fucking newsletter, right? And I'm like, and the one company that apparently got funding was the NOS company. And I'm like, man, you guys are all what is going on right now here? And so angel groups, I know there are people that get funding through it. But for me, it's like you spend 3 months, which is a lifetime for a startup, right? 3 months going through this process. And my feedback is no one responded to the newsletter. Like, how am I supposed to get better from that, man? anyway, not to turn this into a great. Hey, if there are any angel groups out there that want to throw me some money, you know, break the mold, Angel Group X.
So then what's after the Nas investment?
Oh, yeah, right. So synced up with Capital Factory. And then what I did was I at this time, you know, you're doing like, you're pivoting like a goddamn figure skater. You know what I mean? Is you're like, okay, what can I do to make this work? Because I've now identified a dev team in Uruguay that rocks. Cutting dev costs 60%. That's great. Okay. And you find these one-offs of people like, I'll give you 25K. And you're like, okay, cool, great. It's like 6 weeks of runway, and you just keep running. And then now as well on the side, like I recruit to close deals. And like for me though, I do pretty like director level and above. I'm very like high touch. So those are about 20K a pop. And so I go back in and I've just been, if anyone knows an investor, talk to them. If anyone knows anyone who will give me advice on like, hey, is this good? Is this shit? Like, if you were in my shoes, what would you be doing right now? And, you know, you just try to network and you just try to hustle. And, you know, right now it's God knock on wood because fucking tornado could come here and blow my house down. But, you know, we're right about at the finish line. And, well, and then the real race begins, right?
That's very exciting, buddy. I know, obviously... the brand expression stuff that you talked with Bodily is super fascinating. And I know there's almost as big a sports fans as you. So that I definitely heard the wake of that, but man, that sounds super exciting.
Yeah, man, it's good. And you know, I'm grateful to sync up with them, you know, and Matt, like I'm sure we're going to be nerding out a lot of conversations. Cause you know, I love studying sports business. And I think that what they're doing is like, talk about being like, I don't know if ahead of the curve is the right way to put it, but they position themselves really well. Like one of my board members was telling me he's doing this Web3 and crypto stuff. And he's like, man, more and more these days, CEOs and people, they need to have content. Like LinkedIn messages for me, if I'm trying to sell a company, do you have any idea? My hit rate on LinkedIn messages to try and sell my business is probably 1/5 of 1%. But when I can actually sit down with a client, 4 out of every 5 times the hiring agreement signed, right? And they're like, okay, yeah, we're in good hands working with you. So it's like, man, like there needs to be this content where you can get your voice out there more and more to kind of cut through the noise and all the BS that's really like, I mean, half the time you don't even know if you're looking at an ad or not on your phone. You know what I mean? And so you're like, all right. And I think that what they're doing is really, really amazing. And I'm excited because there's been times as I've pitched this, especially with smaller businesses that are like, man, this platform's great. Do you know anyone who can create content for us? Because we don't have this stuff made. So now I'm like, let me put you in touch.
Guess who I know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it feels great, man. Like, it's great to help people and be like, shit, I know some people. You'll be in good hands. It's a great feeling.
It is a really good feeling. And it happens a lot across our units. You know, they'll kind of do different work with each other. And, you know, that the network kind of compounds because, like, each one of our units has, you know, we place an advisory board. And so there's, like, all these heavies that just, like, if you talk to one, it's like somebody knows somebody. You know what I mean? And then so, like... But being able to curate the environment to where nobody's like a huge a-hole and like, you know, that you're getting connected with like somebody, you know, kind of knows what they're talking about. There's so much value in that. And I think you're kind of recreating a similar effect with what you're doing there. It's kind of at a networked level. I think it's fascinating, man. I think it's really interesting. Well, you've got any parting thoughts. I think we're right on the hour. Any other thoughts for the people of the wide world of Inth? You've been speaking with Mr. Michael Winning of Win.
I think, do I have any imparting wisdom? Got some inappropriate jokes that are coming to my mind right now, but if I had to leave anyone with a good piece of wisdom, it's to try. Like, we all live with some form of regret, you know, and it's like, I mean, like when Michael Jordan got inducted in the Hall of Fame, right? And they said, man, you're the greatest basketball player of all time. Like talking about this. He said, what you should be talking about is 10,482 because that's the number of shots that I missed in my career, right? The master has failed more times than the beginner has ever tried. And like to your point of nth, you can't fly in stealth mode. You have to be willing to put yourself out there because if you have a good message and if what you're doing is like, not to say righteous, right? But if you believe in what you're doing, continue being yourself and being vocal about who you are. And the, you know, Dr. Seuss said that be who you are, and because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind, right? And I really think go out there, try. If you believe in what you're doing, try. And if you fail, dude, do you have any idea how much companies love people with entrepreneurial experience? Like it shows them that off the bat, this is someone who hustles, they're a go-getter, they're thinking outside the box. They don't need someone to stand over their shoulder and tell them to work. Companies love people that have entrepreneurial experience. So, I mean, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're probably going to get a pay raise when you go back to work. So, you know, go out there and get after it.
Rock and roll, man. Well, it was a pleasure to meet you, Michael. And hey, if there's anything I could ever do, my door is always open.
Hey, you listen, it's going down just like this.
This has been an Audley production. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah. Our producer is Matt Wells. Oh. Our audio engineer, David Woji. Uh-huh. I'm your host, Sam Sawhook. Yeah. Please like and subscribe. That helps get the word out. Have a lovely, lovely day. We'll see you next time.